Welcome to Trailblazers, where we explore the inspiring journeys of entrepreneurs and industry leaders who are redefining success and making a lasting impact. These game changers are driving progress in our region and around the world. I'm Melody Bradford, your host. Welcome back to another episode of Trailblazers, the podcast where we go beyond the headlines and into the heart of leadership, innovation, and impact in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Today's guest has dedicated much of his life to public service, using both his legal expertise and his unwavering commitment to community to shape Northampton County for the better. Lamont McClure, the county executive of Northampton County since 2018, brings a thoughtful, strategic, and people-first approach to leadership. From his early days in law to navigating the complex challenges of local governance, Lamont has always focused on protecting the most vulnerable, strengthening economic development, and serving with integrity. Today, we'll dive into his professional and personal journey, his philosophy on leadership, the lessons of fatherhood, and, most recently, his decision to run for Congress. Lamont, welcome to Trailblazers. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Well, Melody, thank you. After that introduction, I'm not sure what we can talk about. I don't think this pod can get any better for me than that.
Well, thank you. Let's start from the beginning. What was your upbringing like, and how did your early life shape the values you carry with you today in public service?
So I grew up actually in Weatherly, Carbon County, a 1988 graduate of Weatherly High School. My dad was a lifelong public servant. He was the housing authority director in Carbon County for 40 years until he passed away. Mm-hmm. And my mom was on our school board. And interestingly, she was the first woman to be president of the Weatherly Area School District School Board.
Great example.
So you know, public service was something that was imbued in me at the dinner table from a very early age.
Sure. And that foundation really seems to have set the tone for the way you've led with empathy and purpose, you know. Before politics, though, you practiced law. What initially drew you to the legal profession, and what lessons from your time as an attorney still inform your leadership today?
So I don't know if it was because I was disputatious or just full of hot air when I was a kid, but they had always told me, I think you're going to be a lawyer, and I ended up being a lawyer. And as time went by, it was more than just destiny, right? I mean, what I learned, especially working at the law offices of Peter Angelos, representing former steelworkers and their wives, and very often their widows, was that large corporations have such a terrible influence on our lives when they fail to protect us. So what we did there at the law offices of Peter Angelos, where I worked for 17 years, we represented former steelworkers and other tradespeople who were exposed to asbestos on the job. Mm. And without warning, no one ever told them they were being exposed to asbestos that could harm them. And so they'd get the various diseases you get, mesothelioma, lung cancer, asbestosis, and very awful diseases. What we did was take on the largest corporations in the world on behalf of those steelworkers and their families to get justice for them.
Looking back, was there any particular case that comes to mind that really kind of influenced you and your work in public service now?
Well, there are so many, and one of the reasons I'm so committed to workers and the middle class, I mean, it's informed everything I've done throughout my entire adult life, fighting for workers, fighting for the middle class, is I had a summer very much, we're in summertime now, and it's going to be 100 degrees here today.
Yes.
Where we're at, and it reminded me of a summer where I spent traveling around the greater Lehigh Valley, because we had clients in Northampton, Lehigh, Carbon, Monroe. We had clients all over the area. And I had to put dying clients on videotape. And that summer it was 7. And one of the things that I think made me so determined to continue to fight for working people was, we put them on videotape, Melody, just for context, to preserve their testimony because they weren't going to be around for the time of trial because the corporations always dragged the cases out for years and years. So plaintiffs wouldn't be available for trial. So we would it was terrible. So we would preserve their testimony by videotape. And that summer really was when, this was sometime around 2007, 2008, where I said, you know, I'm gonna commit the rest of my life to fighting for working people in the middle class. And I did that.
And so from the law practicing to, you know, from being an attorney, then you went to Northampton County Council, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I was doing that in parallel.
Okay.
So I was at the law offices of Peter Angelos for 17 years, mm-hmm. practicing law during the day. And Northampton County Council is part-time, and they meet twice a month at night. So I was doing it at the same time. And I was on county council for about 10 years.
And what made you decide, I want to run for county executive?
Well, so to harken back to that first question you asked me this morning, I grew up listening to my dad talk about county government mm-hmm. in Carbon County. County government was always something that so interested me. So I wanted to serve in government at the county level because that's where my passion was, the service to people of the Northampton County at the county level. That's why I ran for county council. I've never ran for anything else other than a county government seat until recently.
And running for public office can kind of be a daunting task, right? So did you ever think to yourself, what if I don't win?
Well, I am very fortunate because I started running when I was pretty young. My parents were always very supportive, and my wife has always been very supportive, and our son is also very supportive. And so when you have that backing from your family,
support system,
that people who understand that this is something that's important, that you need to do this type of service for your community, and you have the support from your family, you can do a lot.
And now you're looking next level, right? So you just announced your congressional run.
Yeah, we announced in February. And I think one of the things that I can bring to Congress, even though only being one of 435 members, a calm and steady hand. Look, in Northampton County, we've governed competently with a calm and steady hand. And we've done very difficult things throughout my entire two terms. So, for example, leading us through the COVID-19 pandemic. I mean, our pandemic protection plan saved lives, and it saved small businesses. There are lots of small businesses that are thriving right now mm-hmm. because during the pandemic, we helped them survive. We created a program, a small business grant program, that got $25 million into the hands of small businesses during the pandemic.
In relatively short time,
yes,
if I recall correctly.
Really quickly. Yeah. And what that did was that helped them survive. And now, because of that money, they're thriving. But the thing I'm really most proud about, that program went valley-wide. Mm-hmm. So there was $25 million in Northampton for small businesses, and then Lehigh County replicated that project in Lehigh County. So $50 million during the pandemic got into the hands of small businesses. And, you know, to remind everyone, small businesses were hit the hardest economically mm-hmm. by the pandemic. So it was really crucial that we did that for the Lehigh Valley. And we did that in concert with the Chamber of Commerce, Tony Iannelli and
Jess O'Donnell Gower. That was a wonderful collaboration.
Yeah, I couldn't say enough positive things about them working with us to help small businesses during the pandemic. So we know how to do government the right way in Northampton County. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that government is the answer to every problem. Mm-hmm. In Northampton County, I've proven that it's not. We've cut the size of Northampton County government by 31%, and no one's even known it, because you can do these things with a scalpel. You don't need a baseball bat. I've never raised taxes. I've had seven budgets. None of them had a tax increase. And as a matter of fact, in 2022, we cut taxes in Northampton County, property taxes, which by the end of my term this year, I'm done at the end of 2025, we will have saved property taxpayers in Northampton County $36 million.
So
that's why I did it.
Something that you're doing here that could actually translate to the national stage, essentially.
Right.
You know, so running for Congress is a deeply personal and public endeavor. What has the campaign taught you so far? I mean, it's only been a few months here, about the people, the region, and even yourself.
It's something that I've always sort of known in my bones, that public service is just that. It's service to the public.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be about you. Of course, the elected official or the candidate needs to have a certain amount of confidence to do that. It takes a certain amount of gumption to put your name on a ballot and mm-hmm. potentially be rejected by tens of thousands of your neighbors, right? But you always have to keep in mind, and I always have, whether it was on county council, in my practice of law as county executive, the people are the reason. That's what you do. So as I'm campaigning for Congress, we're focusing on people and their needs, and especially the working class.
And as far as you being the county executive and being a public service, like you talked about, you've led a broad range of departments, from human services to emergency management. What's the most challenging part of managing such a diverse organization?
So I think county government is one of the hardest levels of government to operate. We do so many disparate things. You point out, we do 911. We run a prison. We run a nursing home. So we're doing all these different things at the same time. And you can't become a master of all of the details. Mm-hmm. So one, you have to hire good people.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you have to trust those good people. But three, you must, you know, it being county executive, you must familiarize yourself with all of these different aspects of government, whether it be children and youth, what a CNA does at Greysdale, what COs do at the prison. You have all of these different job functions that you must become at least minimally conversant in so that you can run this big, diverse county government. We're $500 million a year in our budget. And then we have another $500 million in our pension program for $1 billion. We're managing $1 billion a year and about 2,000 employees. So this is a big job. It's one of the bigger jobs in the Lehigh Valley. And you really need to focus in on that. But one of the keys is hiring good people.
What has that role taught you about leadership?
So, I mean, when I first got elected, I had a plan. Don't raise taxes and maybe hopefully cut them. Invest in farmland preservation, open space, and environmentally sensitive land, and then keep Greysdale county-owned and county-operated. So we've kept all those promises. I'm really proud about that. We've kept all those promises, and we even got to cut taxes in 2022. But we're cruising along, keeping our promises, doing the work, and then the pandemic strikes. And the world falls apart.
Yeah.
And we have to jump into action and we have to take a leadership role, declare an emergency, and then figure out how to get people PPP, how to get people their tests. Because there was a time in Northampton County in the Lehigh Valley where COVID-19 testing was very limited.
Mm-hmm.
So we partnered with the former Easton Hospital to get testing done at a time when people couldn't get testing done in Northampton County. So we were really proud of jumping into action to do that. And of course, we talked about our pandemic protection plan for small businesses.
Yeah. So how do you balance with all of those different things happening in the pandemic and everything kind of coming under your leadership at this time that you were throwing curveballs that you clearly may have not expected, right? None of us expected it. How do you balance short-term pressures with crises and emergencies with the long-term vision needed for sustainable county development and making it what it needs to be, staying true to that plan, making sure you're leading the team in a forward direction? How do you do all that?
So the second part of your question, I think, is you have to have the vision and then you have to express that vision, right? So that the folks, the good folks that you've hired that are working for you and that you partner with in the community, because it's more than just the government. It's about all these various partnerships that the county has with private entities, with other public entities, with nonprofits.
Mm-hmm.
So you establish the vision. And my vision very early on, and if you attended any of my State of the County speeches, what you heard was we need to walk a middle path. We need to have a balanced approach to development in Northampton County. And half of that equation is the preservation of farmland, open space, and environmentally sensitive land. And so I set about budgeting, this will have been spent by the end of this year, $25 million on the preservation of farms, open space, and environmentally sensitive land. Environmentally sensitive land is what I'm really proud of because that historically has received the less funding. So what I often talk about is our green future. That's half of the equation. The other half of the equation is economic development and job creation. Because although we want to maintain a good quality of life with our green future, we also need jobs, right?
Yeah.
And we need good middle class, solid, life-sustaining jobs. And so we have to engage in economic development. And one of the things that I have been a leader on is emphasizing that we need manufacturing jobs in Northampton County and the Lehigh Valley. And so we're constantly balancing those two things, the preservation of green spaces and open spaces
with the development.
Because we need jobs. We need job creation as well.
As you're doing all this and you're working with public entities, public figures, private entities, those that have their own agenda, how do you stay on the bipartisan path? You know, I mean, because it's hard right now. And without getting too political, you know, how do you walk the walk and talk the talk so that everybody, not just your county, but those around you, those that you have to work with, and in some cases, your adversaries. How do you stay on that bipartisan path?
So it's complicated, right? I am a partisan Democrat, and I'm a proud Democrat. However, as county executive, I remember being in Forks Township at the Forks Days not a year or two ago, and a gentleman came up to me and he said, hi, Lamont, how are you? We had never met before. And he said, what party are you? Because, you know, when I read about you and watch you on FMZ, I can't tell what political party you are. And that really struck home with me because that's how I've tried to govern. I don't care what your party is.
You're representing both sides as a leader.
I'll give you an example. We're going up to the Slate Belt right after we're done here to talk about the reduction in farmers market coupons for low-income senior citizens.
Sure.
And a lot of the folks in the Slate Belt didn't vote for me, and I don't care. My administration has made historic investments in the Slate Belt, irrespective of whether I win up there or not. I just don't care, because once I'm in the job, it's my job to represent everybody. So I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent or you don't vote at all. If I have to take care of you, if that's my sworn duty, I will. We get calls and letters and emails every day. We never ask, we never inquire, even internally, is this person a Democrat or a Republican? We don't care. If you have a problem and it's within our ability to solve it, and remember, we can't solve every problem. Mm-hmm. But if it's within our ability to solve it, we do. And if it's not, we tell you why we can't.
Yeah, that's great advice. I'm going to shift gears here for a moment. Was there a moment in your tenure that you'd consider a major pivot, something that challenged you or shifted your perspective as a leader?
So again, I hearken back to the pandemic because it changed all of our lives, right? And the first person to pass away that we know of in the Lehigh Valley was infected in New Jersey.
Oh.
And the reason why this was so important for the Lehigh Valley with respect to how it was going to impact us, in the early days of the pandemic, we were adjacent to three of the hottest spots in the world,
mm-hmm.
not just in the country, in the world.
Yeah.
New York City, our friends in New Jersey, and the greater Philadelphia area all had tremendously high rates of COVID-19, and we have a lot of interaction, a lot of circulation with those three areas.
Sure.
So we knew we were going to get pounded. And it was when that first unfortunate person passed, I was like, I have to go on to war footing because this is coming for us, and we have to do everything we can to prepare and then fight back. And then that's what we did.
That's incredible. And, you know, during that time, it was so uncertain. And I remember I was doing some consulting work for Lehigh with the Small Business Development Center. And we reached out. It was in conjunction with Tina Smith from, you know, your Community and Economic Development Department. I think we met with over 200 companies just to connect with them and see. And, you know, some of them were tearjerkers, you know. There was a gentleman, I'll never forget, he owned a diner, and we had talked to him from that perspective, and he said, you know, I have these workers, and a lot of them are single mothers, and they have no food because we're not open. They can't get a paycheck, he said. I just tell them to come in, and I'm going to feed them. And it stopped me, and I thought to myself, wow, you know, and Tina and I were kind of misty-eyed because we're like, you know, that really hits kind of home.
I'm so glad you mentioned Tina because we've talked a couple times this morning about how you need good people.
Mm-hmm.
And Tina Smith, our Director of Community Economic Development, is one of those good people, one of the finest people.
Yeah, she is quite the lady, one amazing lady. What principles guide you when you're making some of those tough decisions that affect thousands of people? What do you turn to?
So it really comes down to the basics. People tend to overthink or overcomplicate things. What are my guiding principles as county executive? It's don't raise taxes, preserve as much open and green space as you possibly can, and keep Graysdale county owned and county operated. Now, the third one, you've talked to me several times with your questions today about challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Graysdale's been the greatest challenge.
Mm.
We have 67 counties in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and only 17 counties now have nursing homes that they own. all of the other counties have divested from, they've sold their nursing homes to for-profit corporations. I've always refused to do that. As a matter of fact, when I was on county council, I led the fight to save Greysdale from privatization to a for-profit corporation. So I've been fighting corporations my whole adult life.
Why is that so important to you, though?
And Lehigh County has a wonderful public nursing home, Cedarbrook as well. It's on two different campuses. And between Cedarbrook and Greysdale, there, at any given time, there are between 1,000 and 1,200 people in the Lehigh Valley who have nowhere else to go. Mm-hmm. Their only insurance is Medicaid, and but for publicly owned and operated nursing homes, those people would have nowhere to go. And so it is our moral obligation to make sure that those folks, you know, aren't dying under bridges, aren't overwhelming our hospitals, because what happens is that, you know, if they don't have a place to live, mm-hmm. like a Greysdale or a Cedarbrook, they get on a merry-go-round that starts in the ER and back to
continuum
the curb.
Continuum of care,
yes,
yeah.
And until, unfortunately, they pass. So I think that our moral obligation is to continue to own and operate Greysdale, and I've devoted my whole government career to making sure that's the case.
And so I'm sure that people agree, sometimes disagree with you. And collaboration can be tough in politics. How do you foster cooperation across departments and with those that you work with?
I think it's easy when everybody's interests align. It's when everyone's interests don't align that it becomes far more difficult. And too often, I think we go along just to get along. And sometimes you got to fight. So if you're getting less transportation money, you got to fight for more transportation money. So while cooperation and collaboration are always preferred, and they're always most easily achieved when everybody's rowing in the same direction,
right?
Sometimes everybody's not rowing in the same direction, and you got to fight for your rights and for equity. And I've always been a fighter for the people of Northampton County, and I'll be a fighter for all the people who live in this congressional district if I ever become their representative.
And as you look to the future, and you look at the way that you've governed in the past, how would you describe your leadership style, and how has it evolved over time, given everything?
Well, I think earlier in my career, you could describe it more confrontational. It's a style that was more confrontational. As I've grown and matured, I think that what we're trying to do is bring more people together through our ability to outline a vision that, you know, includes more people. You know, the more people you can include in your vision, the broader your coalition of folks who are willing to help you achieve your goals mm-hmm. are. So what I've been trying to do rhetorically and through governance is widen the circle of folks that we can help. And by widening that circle, those folks help us, and we make the community better.
And what would you say is, and we talked a little bit about this already, but from a perspective of not just county executive, but as an attorney and now going into this congressional run, what do you feel is the most significant difference you've made, or what do you hope to achieve, you know, going forward as far as, you know, impacting the lives of those that you're serving?
So I think that without, you know, trying to be too profound, we saved lives. Whether it's our Fake is Real program, we sued the opioid manufacturers, we won money from the opioid manufacturers, and we created a program called Fake is Real, which you can go on the internet and read about. But that program has saved lives.
And that's the fentanyl crisis program.
Yes, that's the fentanyl crisis mm-hmm. program. And that has saved lives in Northampton County. Our quick reaction to the COVID-19 pandemic saved lives in Northampton County. So there are so many ways that I think our service in government has been, I think, impactful. But you asked me what means the most to me. And that our ability to help people and our ability to actually save lives is really, I think, the thing that I will always be most proud of in my time mm-hmm. as county executive. And you also mentioned my legal career. We couldn't save anybody. It was too late. All we could try and do was get justice for the widows and the families. you know, one of the things I talked to you about that summer where I was putting all of those people who are unfortunately dying on videotape to preserve their testimony. And to a person, to a man, they were men in this case, they all said, take care of her. And that has stayed with me because I would ask them, you know, as I was leaving, is there anything I could do for you? I meant, can I, you know, help put an air conditioner in the window or something, right?
Yeah.
They're like, yes, take care of her. And that's always stayed with me, not just in that very specific way, but if I'm going to be in public service, you know, my obligation is to do as much as I possibly can, not for myself, but for the people I serve. And so that's really what that's all about.
I'm going to shift gears here.
Sure.
You're a husband and a father. How has fatherhood influenced your approach to leadership and decision making?
So I don't know that I can draw a straight line from, you know, parenthood to how I engage my team and lead them. But what I think I can say is I talked to you about growing up in Carbon County, mm-hmm. but I think I became a man in Northampton County. I mean, this is where I got, this is where I got married. This is where our son was born. He was born right up the hill here in Fountain Hill. He started school at St. Anne's in Bethlehem and then graduated from Freedom High School. So this is where, you know, we planted our flag. And my wife's a magistrate in Bethlehem Township. And she was before that 20 years an assistant district attorney in Northampton County. Mm. So we've devoted, you know, most of our adult lives to the public service of the people of Northampton County. And we have been honored to do that. You know, I think we both grew up similarly. That public service was important. So I think that he, you know, when he was born, it caused me to understand that we needed to do more than just take care of ourselves. We needed to help serve other people. And I think that's probably how it most impacts what I do.
And how would you say your career in public service affected your family life? And how do you manage that to balance that public duty and personal presence?
Well, the great thing about being involved in county government, and remember, for 10 years I was on county council, which is part-time, and I was working full-time as practicing law, but it does still give you time to be present. So I coached a little league at BTAA. I coached at Freemansburg, and I coached basketball at BTAA. So I had the opportunity to be present for my son through those years. So and again, they've always just been terrifically supportive of the things I've had to do. And I never made them do anything they didn't want to do. So if there was some picnic they didn't want to go to, I didn't make them go. So that helped as well. And I think that they would say that for whatever they missed out on, they're very happy and proud that we're engaged in the service to the public that we are.
As we wrap up our interview here, is there any particular mentor that made a difference or public leader that you admire most?
So in terms of mentors, I've had a few. I had some college professors who had a tremendous impact on me, and they had different political ideologies. One was a socialist, and another one was a very conservative Republican, both history professors. And they let me help them work on their books, and they caused me to have intellectual curiosity. In my professional life, I had a few mentors in the law that taught me how to fight for people. George Weber, who was a boss of mine here at Angelos in Bethlehem, taught me how to fight for people and how to do that ethically and within the bounds of the law. And John Morganelli taught me a lot about not only the law and what it means to uphold the law, but he also taught me a lot about politics. And the interaction and the interplay between law and politics. So those were my mentors, I think, you know, throughout most of my adult life.
Lamont, thank you so much for sharing your journey and your wisdom and your heart with us today. What you've reminded us is that leadership isn't about titles or positions. It's about people. It's about serving the people. It's about showing up with integrity, standing firm on values, and making space for others to thrive. Whether it's navigating a public health crisis, expanding economic opportunity, or stepping into a run for Congress, you've shown that trailblazing starts with service, doesn't it? To our listeners, if today's conversation moved you, inspired you, or made you think about the kind of leader you want to be, share the episode. Let's keep building communities of purpose together. Until next time, I'm Melody Bradford, and this is Trailblazers.
Melody, thank you so much.
Thank you.